All right, Chancey Williams on the podcast this week. This is a cool guy. I really like him. I think we met at CRS and we ran into each other, and he's just such a cowboy in country music. He's just such a real cowboy, did the rodeo thing, became a musician. I mean, he's the real deal. This interview started recording in the middle of a conversation about the 100th episode of my podcast, when we did this big stunt to get Bobby Bones on the podcast. So that's what we're talking about here, getting Bobby Bones on the 100th episode of my podcast. This interview starts in the middle of that conversation. And then we pivot to Chancey pretty quickly and go from there. So, okay, check it out. Here we go. Playing it now.
Smart, man.
It was a whole thing because it was the 100th episode of my podcast.
Right.
And he said on his 100th episode, he goes, you know, you're not a real podcast till you have 100 episodes. So I did all these stunts. I got a cameo of Carly Pierce asking him to come on to my podcast for Bobby Bones. And then I did a live reading of his children's book on Instagram. And that didn't work. And then it was funny because I had a really good mentor. I could probably come down even a little bit still, if it's possible. Thank you.
In my headset, though, just so you know, y'all do sound even.
Cool.
Okay.
I could probably even come down more. I feel like I'm really hot. Let's see.
Yeah.
Okay. Up a tiny bit, and then we're gonna really kick it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Let's kick it.
No, but it was funny because I had a mentor of mine. I was doing all these stunts to try to get him onto the show. I had a mentor of mine say, you know, this isn't a good look. She was like, you're looking so desperate. And I said,
I don't think so.
Well, that's what I thought. And
because he's one of the biggest, you know,
yes,
radio personalities slash podcasters. So. Throw everything at the wall, right?
Absolutely. So I was pitching the billboard idea. I was like, I was nervous about it because I didn't know how it was going to be received. Like, I didn't know. And she was like, look, you took a great stab at it, but this is starting to look a little desperate.
No way.
I think you should stop. And I was like, screw it. I'm going to put the billboard up anyway. I did. And that's the thing that did it. And I always think about, like, there's that meme you see sometimes where, like, people are, like, digging for gold.
Right.
And are, like, 1 inch away from gold. And they go, screw it, and they turn back. I always think about that. Like, you never know how close you are to something.
Well, the answer is always no until you ask. I mean, everybody's at no for things, you know. So if you just keep after it, they're going to say no, but they might say yes. Like, that was so smart to pull a billboard, man. I loved it.
And, you know, he took out billboards early in his career.
Did he?
He announced this. He took out these billboards early in his career when he moved to Nashville that said, like, go home, Bobby Bones. No one wants you here.
Right.
And then later he announced that he was actually the one who took those billboards out.
Really?
But it was so funny that he took out hate billboards on himself around town.
I've never met him. I'm just a fan of, you know, what he does in music. And
dude, he's a great guy. I was with him on the ACM red carpet last week.
Were you?
Yeah, and he interviewed me, or I interviewed him, and he's just always great. And you know what's crazy is he's one of the few guys, and we're here to talk about Chancey, but Chancey or Chauncey?
Chancey.
Chancey, thank you. Yeah. He's one of the few guys who just does everything he says he's going to do. Like, he's told me, like, even on the ACM red carpet, he did a crazy big thing for me, and he was like, I'm going to do this for you. And I was like, no, you're not. That's something that people say and don't follow through on. And within minutes, he, like, followed through on it, and it was like, dude, like, he's just a man of his word.
Yeah, and you can tell he's a humble guy that's made it the hard way, and, you know, he talks about himself and getting to where he got, and him telling you that, you know, he may fade away someday, and you're gonna be the next guy. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
God, I don't know, man. We'll see.
Yeah, you never know, right?
You never know, but you know, we'll see. But you know, I've always kind of looked up to his career and the way he's done it, and
right.
I just feel energized around him.
Yeah. I hope someday I can go meet him. You know,
I bet you will. I bet.
An artist, when you interview with Bobby Bones, things are going good.
Yeah. I bet you're close.
And
now.
With Zach.
And
I'm here with you today.
And with me.
Yeah, that's right.
Dude, I'm so fascinated by your story because I'm not a big, like, I've actually been to a couple rodeos.
Right.
But I don't really know a thing about rodeo. And you're the rodeo king.
Yeah.
How close were you to actually going fully professional? You were a professional rodeo.
Yeah.
Rodeo cowboy.
Yeah.
Right.
So I went, you know, grew up rodeoing since I was a kid. My dad rodeoed, and we ranch and family, but rodeoed all through junior high and high school. Went to the high school national finals, you know, which is a feat. And then I got a rodeo scholarship to college. So I went to college basically just to rodeo. And, you know, I had to get a degree too. So rodeo was always my main focus, even up till, you know, until I quit. Rodeoed in college, paid for college with rodeoing, made the college national finals twice, and then was starting to pro rodeo pretty good for a while and go for it. And then kind of music took over. But it's two different worlds, and it was hard to juggle both. I was starting to play a lot, really loved music, but I also loved rodeo, so it was hard to make a decision. I just, you know, I figured I could do this music thing a lot longer because, you know, rodeo is hard on your body and it's a young man's game. So I was looking for the future of what can I do forever.
What was you did team roping?
I rode saddle broncs. I mean, I team roped and calf rope too in high school and college, but my main event was riding saddle broncs, which is bucking horses.
What is that? So that's basically like bull riding, except you're on a horse,
yep.
Right?
Yeah. So it's and there's, you know, there's bareback riding. They ride with the rigging. You ride, you know, it's a little bit different system. And then the saddle bronc riding, you ride with the saddle, and they buck, you know, both bucking horses.
Why'd you do horses over bull riding?
I never loved being a bull rider. I mean, I rode bulls a little bit in high school, maybe got on 5 or 6, you know. I just didn't crave it.
Was that insane to me?
Well, it's just, and I would say bronc riding's more dangerous than bull riding. You
really?
Know?
Why?
Just because the size and the power of a horse, you know, the way you get bucked off. I have 5 or 6 friends that are paralyzed from riding broncs, and I have a lot of friends of,
but not from riding bulls.
Yeah, I have friends have been hurt riding bulls, but it's different types of injuries. You know, might break a leg or break an arm. If you get bucked off wrong on a horse, you break your back or your neck. And I have, I think, 5 friends in wheelchairs from riding broncs. So it's super dangerous. And I was so tall, I didn't really fit being a good bull rider. A lot of those really great bull riders are real little. And so I was a little taller and lankier, so the bucking horse deal fit me better. And my dad rode saddle broncs, so I wanted to do what my dad did.
So how do you train when you're a kid to do this? Because to me, it's like you're horrible at this until you start to get good at it, but you keep getting thrown off horses, I imagine,
yeah.
Right?
So you just keep getting on. I mean, hundreds of horses. So, you know, we grew up riding, you know, ranch horses and broke horses. So I knew how to ride real well. And then, but to train yourself to ride bucking horses, it's an art. And, you know, you have to learn the timing of your horse and how to hold your rein. You know, it's called a hack rein, and how to lift on that and how to set your feet and spur them. That all that stuff plays in part when you learn how to, but learning, yeah, you learn how to get bucked off a lot.
That's the, can I get my headphones down actually a little bit more? I'm so sorry. Thank you so much. To me, it's crazy because if I would not be partaking in an activity that I knew was so dangerous, especially because you probably see the injuries that your friends get. And that's so life changing.
It is.
Some of those injuries that to me, it's insane that you would have done this professionally or that you would have gone through with this.
And when you're in the heat of it, you don't ever think about getting hurt. I mean, your buddy might get hurt. But you're like, well,
that's not going to happen to me. Yeah.
But then, you know,
but then a good buddy gets hurt and you go, oh my God, I know that guy.
Yeah. My roommate in college was a great saddle bronc rider and had a horse rare over in the chute with him, broke his back. He wasn't even out riding.
Oh my God.
And he's, you know, paralyzed from the waist down now. And I've had friends get bucked off that didn't look that bad. You're like, man, that wasn't that bad. And they just don't get up. You're like, well, what the heck happened? Then you see guys get bucked off real hard on their neck and just jump right up.
And is there no bracing or protection that riders wear?
A lot of guys now wear protective vests, you know, which will protect your ribs and your chest from getting kicked or something. But an injury like your back or neck breaking, there's no...
What is the thrill of it? Is it the thrill of controlling a wild animal or being one with this crazy animal?
Yeah, it's that adrenaline rush.
It's just adrenaline.
Yeah, and it's competition, you know, so you're a professional athlete, so you're still getting to compete at a professional level after high school or after college even, you know. So, and it's that moment right before you nod your head in the chute. You don't know what this horse is going to do. I mean, typically, you know, you ask the stock contractor ahead of time, you know, what's this horse do? And he said, you know, he fades to the left and, you know, he bucks hard or whatever. He'll tell you about him. But that day, that horse might do something different. So it's the unknown of getting in there. And he's like, he could do anything today.
And that's what you would crave.
Yeah, it's that rush. And, you know, it's 8 seconds, but it's intense. And there's nothing like it. You know, I get the question all the time of what do you get more nervous at, singing in front of 10 or 20,000 people or riding a bronc? And I would say it's still riding a bronc because, you know, there's a little bit more control in shows. You still get nervous of wanting to do good and stuff, but it's not like you're dealing with a wild animal. So it's the adrenaline that it's a drug. I still dream about it.
Because I've heard you say that you still have dreams about this.
Yeah,
I
still wake up and I'll either have a dream I forgot my saddle, or I'll have a dream that I'm late for a rodeo, and just have a dream of just riding too. And I don't know how to get rid of it. I've done a lot of neat things in my life. You know, I used to wrestle for 13 years. I don't dream about that. I still sing all the time. I don't dream about that. I still dream about riding bucking horses.
Would you ever get up on a horse, or do you feel like that would be crazy? Because even if you broke a hand or a wrist or something.
That's the thing. It's one of those things where if you're not in shape for it and doing it all the time, you're really prone to getting hurt. Like you said.
So you can't casually do this.
No.
Like, you're never going to do this again, probably.
Probably not. You know, and like team roping and stuff, you can rope till you're old. Like, I could go rope one today and not worry about getting too hurt. I mean, you could rip a finger off or something. But
yeah,
if you know what you're doing, you're probably not going to get hurt. But riding a bucking horse, if you haven't done it for a while, you're prone to getting hurt. And so where I've got this career in music, you know, I have 13 people that work for me, depending on me being there. So if I break a leg, or say I break my back and I'm out for a year or something, I don't know how to feed them. So
yeah,
it's a choice I had to make, and I wish I had rodeoed a couple more years just to see if I could have made the NFR. You know, I have a lot of friends that have made the NFR, and maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't. Hindsight's 20/20. I don't know. But I do love music, and it is the same type of life. I mean, rodeo, you ride one day somewhere, you travel 6 or 8 hours, ride that day, and you're on the road all the time, which is the same format as music. We play a show here, drive 8 or 10, 12 hours, play a show, and just on the road. So it's the same lifestyle, which is fun.
How much money were you making in high school doing rodeo? Like, do you make a little bit of money?
You
doing
make a
it?
Little bit, you know, enough to cover your fees. And
what's
stuff.
Making you money? Like, do you have to win or to get paid? Basically,
yeah. So they usually pay, you know, top four, top six in the rodeo. So I mean, in high school it was in the hundreds, you know.
You make $300-400
if you win a high school rodeo. And then college paid too. It's, you know, it's one of those sports that's not an NCAA sport. So you enter, and it, you know, might cost you a couple hundred to enter. But then you might make $500-600, maybe $1,000 if you ride good. And then, you know, some of these pro rodeos now, if you win, you know, some of those guys are making upwards of $150,000 to $200,000 a year. If they ride real good.
God, it doesn't even seem like that much.
It's not.
For the risk.
I know.
For the risk that they're putting into it.
And to go up and down the road, say you do 100 rodeos a year, you know, you spend half of that getting to those rodeos and entering, so you're not really making that much.
But don't they make money on sponsorships or
other
things?
Yeah, so once you get real good, it's all about the sponsorship money and TV spots and all the things.
But you had this foresight, which was, like, this was, you were never going to do this past, what, 35?
Yeah.
Right? There was no way.
And my dad was a great saddle bronc rider, but he quit young, too, because he knew he wanted to be a rancher. So he knew that if he would rodeo till he was 35 or 40, then you basically got to start over. And there's no way to just start being a rancher at 40. So he quit early, bought a ranch, and now he's, you know, our dads and mom have paid for 2 ranches from him having the foresight to quit early, too.
Yeah.
So I kind of looked at that and said, I think if I want to make a run at music, I should probably start when I'm young.
Didn't he give you this great advice, which is, wasn't there a moment where you were doing rodeo and music and you felt like you were half-assing both of them?
Yeah.
And didn't he say to you, you got to pick one, dude.
He did.
And you've got to go all in on that
good
one,
research.
Right?
Yeah, I've said that a lot. So I was at one point riding, and then I was a pickup man, you know, the pickup men in the rodeo, the guys that pick the guys up off the horses. I was picking up too and playing music. So I was kind of doing all three. Some rodeos I would pick up half the rodeo, jump off my pickup horse, go back behind the chutes, put my bronc saddle on, put my bronc chaps on, ride, get off.
And
go put
my... That's such a fine thing, because I have to imagine you're doing that, and you got to think you're killing it, because you're juggling both these things.
Yeah,
that's kind of a fun feeling.
And it was fun, man. And then sometimes we'd play the rodeo dance after.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, I was probably not riding as good as I should have been. I wasn't really focused on it because I was loving music. I was picking up good, but picking up doesn't pay any money.
What is that? What do you mean you were picking up?
Like
you were...
So like the pickup man?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So like you see the two guys that ride out in the arena that are riding, you know, the broke horses. And
the
whistle blows, they ride in and pick the guy up off the bronc.
So who falls?
Huh?
Who's on the ground, basically?
Well, nobody. If you make the whistle, you get off on the pickup man. So
wait, I have no idea how this works.
I know it's hard to explain to people. That
what is wait? So the horse is now bucking in the arena.
Yep. So if I'm the rider, I nod in the chute. They let the horse out. I ride him. And once
this thing's like flipping out.
Yeah.
Like this thing's nuts.
Yeah. You're riding 8 seconds. You know.
Yeah.
The whistle blows. You double grab, and then there's usually two guys out in the arena called pickup men. So they'll ride in right beside you. Instead of having to jump off on the ground or get bucked off, you get off on their horse, which is broke, and then they'll slow down, and then you get off on the ground on your feet. So those are called pickup men.
What percentage of the time does that end up happening?
A lot. A lot of the times the guys make the whistle.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So why don't they extend the time so that less people make the whistle?
That's a good point. I've never thought of that. Who can ride the longest?
Isn't that what this should all be about?
Yeah. It shouldn't be just 8 seconds. Let's make it longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least with the pros, like, why not see how far we can push this sport?
Yeah, I've never thought of it that way. Why is it only 8? But
that's just what it is. So you were kind of doing that.
I was kind of doing all three.
Yeah.
And, I just felt like I was kind of half-assing. I was mediocre at all three.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't really taking music serious, riding Bronx. Was okay, picking up okay, and Dad's just like, why don't you just pick one that you really want to do and go do it right? I was like, all right, I'm going to do music. So I chose music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you, because you've got the most loyal band, it seems like. Like,
yeah.
Your band members are, you've been playing with them
forever.
From day one?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I had a band in high school, you know, and I'm the only original member from my high school band. But, you know, I moved down here in 2007, 2008 to do an internship to finish my master's. And then, so when I moved back is when I kind of hired Wyatt and Brooke. And then, we're a family, you know, we're not just an artist that hired guns from town. Like, I would take somebody that's maybe not as good as a musician, but awesome to hang out with on the road because we live together. So yeah, my band is loyal and we've got to where we are as a group, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's the thing that you don't realize until you tour is, like, when you're coming up, you always hear, oh, it's all about the hang.
Yeah.
And then when you get on the road, you go, oh, my God, it's really all about the hang.
Yeah.
Because that's all you do.
I mean, day in and day out. I mean, last year we did 100 dates. So we were on the road about 275 days. I mean,
yeah.
Imagine living in a single wide trailer with 12 people is what those buses are about the same size as.
Yeah.
275 days a year. So you have to be able to get along. To me, it's 95% personality and 5% musicianship. I can tell them what I want them to play and they can learn it the way I want it. You can't tell somebody how to be cool and chill.
Yeah. But you've got a great band. Were they all just local people in Wyoming basically?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the things that's been hard basing out of Wyoming. I lived in Nashville for a bit, but I'm from Wyoming, still live out there. So to find the professional caliber of players that I'm looking for, as we're professionals now, are really hard to come by. You know, Wyatt's great. He's been with me 16 years. And Brooke, she's a great fiddle player. Been musician of the year twice up there in the Rocky Mountain, CMAs twice. She's been with me 16 years. Dale, our drummer, is from Fargo, North Dakota. We have to fly him every weekend because he's so good that there's nobody in Wyoming that plays like him. My guitar player, Casey's from Minneapolis. I mean, so we've had to outsource some of these players to get the band I've wanted, but they're all the same type people as we grew up playing, you know, kind of the bar scene and the cover scene that we just know more as friends than musicians, but I already knew they were good. So we have a great, I mean, band and crew, we're all just friends. You know, my tour manager is an old saddle bronc rider that retired.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not old, he's younger than me, but, you know, he'd kind of got where he was going to retire. So I was like, what do you know how to tour manage? You know, he didn't know anything about music.
He had no idea.
I just trained him.
Yeah.
He can figure it out. So he's a bronc rider. And my lighting guy is my roommate, Rob. We've lived together since college.
In Wyoming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's just friends that we figured out. You know, we've done things the hard way, but I love it.
Why wouldn't you, like, there has to be a thing in your head that says, maybe I should move to Nashville, or I should spend all my downtime in Nashville and, you know, do that thing. But you haven't really done that, but you're here pretty frequently.
Yeah, I try to be here 1 week a month, you know, just one of those things, be present to win.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I met you.
Yeah.
I met you through Zach Hallcroft, who's from
Gillette. Yeah.
You know, he grew up 30 miles from me. And then I, you know, met you again with Ian and Caroline, also Wyoming people. So just being here, getting to meet people like you and whoever you run into, it seems like every time I'm here, I run into somebody that's influential in the music business, and they see me here working. Oh, man, they must be doing pretty good. You know, I have thought about just getting an apartment and being here more because I do like Nashville. I just don't know if I could be here full time. It's nice to go back to Wyoming where there's nobody.
Where do you live in Wyoming though? Like what kind of, like are you kind of in the middle of,
yeah,
you're in the middle of nothing.
So our ranch is in the northeast corner of Wyoming up by Gillette.
Is your family's ranch?
Yeah.
And so this is a sheep ranch. There's no oil on this ranch.
No oil, anything. No.
Yeah.
Everybody around us has oil, and they've drilled a few times. We sure would like to hit some oil, but we haven't.
Is there a chance that you end up hitting oil on your ranch?
I mean, there always is.
Do you pretty much know that that's not going to happen?
We're not banking on it. I mean, some of our neighbors just hit some big wells. I mean, they keep coming up with technology to find oil.
To find oil, yeah.
So one of our neighbors just hit a big one. We're like, well, maybe.
What does that even mean? How much money are they making from a big well?
I don't know. I think, I don't even know the numbers, but it could be, say, maybe $1,000 a day, $500 a day.
Oh, my God.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's close. But, my dad and mom have bought and paid for two ranches with only ranching.
How many acres?
We run on about 30,000 acres.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, some of that's leased, but a lot of it's deeded.
Yeah.
But, this day and age, even back in the 80s, they bought our ranch in 1985. From nothing. My dad was a hired man. My mom was a school teacher. So they're a good success story of coming from nothing. But they have paid for two ranches with only ranching, no inheritance, no oil, no coal, no help, just hard ranching. So, and then just watching them do that, and us too, me and my brothers helped put that thing together. We worked there our whole lives. My little brother still runs it with my parents. That's hard work.
And is it all sheep, basically? Like, is that where all the revenue comes from?
Mostly, yeah. So we run about 6,000.
Or lamb, not sheep, lamb. Well, is that the same thing?
Yeah, sheep. So a lamb's just a sheep that's 1 year old.
Yeah, yeah, okay. There you go, yeah.
Which is what people like to eat.
I sound like an idiot when I'm talking about
this
stuff.
No, I like to explain it to people because it's. I always tell people I know more about ranching and rodeo than I do music. So it's fun to educate people on ranching.
But all the revenue from this ranch basically comes from?
From sheep, and we run cows too. So we run about 350 head of cows, and we run 6,000 head of sheep. And then, you make money, a little money off the wool. We just got done shearing last week. And then you make money off your calves that you sell the steer calves every year, and then you sell your weather lambs each year, which are, neutered bucks.
Yeah.
And steer calves are neutered bulls.
I gotta get a ranch, man. This sounds so fun.
It is a great lifestyle. It's a hard life,
Yeah.
No ranchers are real rich. It's not like Yellowstone. I mean, it ain't what you think you see on TV, but it's a wonderful life. You work for yourself, you're outside all the time, you take care of animals, and it is a great life. And so I have a house there on our place behind my folks, and I have a house in Laramie too where I went to college. So I kind of spend time between both, and then living on the bus and then living at the Virgin Hotel in Nashville.
Yeah, why would you ever come here? Why would you ever move here?
Well, like I said, it is fun to be here. I'm going to stay all week this week, and it's just fun to see everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, so you're sort of in this crossroads where you're like, I've got this rodeo career, but I think music is going to be more sustainable, and that's the path I should take.
Right.
But you start out, playing cover bands? Like, what was your plan? How did you think you were going to become a massive star?
Well, I didn't really know. I don't know how I was going to get there. So we had the cover band in college, and so we were playing a lot. And like I said, I finished my master's degree and had to do an internship. And my master's is in public administration. My undergrad's in political science.
What do you do with public administration?
I don't know. Talk about it in interviews.
Yeah. No, but really, what do people do with that degree?
You can work for cities, manager, or you can get into politics.
God, that sounds miserable.
Yeah, and when I went to college, I had to pick a degree. I went to college.
You said political science.
Yeah. So I was like, I'll just pick political science. Ended up liking it. Politics when I went to college was a lot nicer than it is today. So finished my undergrad. I didn't even know I was graduating. It kind of spooked me. And my advisor said, hey, you need to go get your cap and gown. This was my fifth year. I said, for what? She's like, you're graduating next month. And I kind of panicked because I really liked college.
Yeah.
I was good at it. Loved it.
Great parties.
She's like, you could go to grad school. I'm like, what is grad? I didn't know what grad school was. She's like, it's just two more years and get your master's degree. I'm like, sign me up.
Yeah.
So went to grad school. Then to finish my degree, I had to do an internship, which typically you'd have to go to Washington, D.C. and work for a senator or something, I was like, I don't really want to do that. And she's like, what do you want to do? I was like, I want to move to Nashville and see what that's about. She's like, I'll sign off on anything you want. You find an internship in Nashville. I'll sign off on it. So, our family's good friends with the Ledoux's. Chris and my dad grew up rodeoing together. Knew Chris since I was a kid as just dad's friend. And then I found out he was a star and a singer, and then became friends with, you know, Chris's kids. Me and Bo high school rodeoed together. Me and Cindy went to college together. Will lived with me for a while in college. Just friends with the family. So I called Will. I said, hey, does your dad's management do internships? He's like, yeah, call Mark Sissel. And called him up. They hired me. And then I worked for TK Kimbrell, TKO Artist Management, and Show Dog for a year. And just kind of
met. You became pretty close with Toby Keith.
Yeah. I would drive.
While you were there.
Yeah. Would drive Toby a lot. So when he would fly in, I would just stay with him basically 24 hours a day when he was recording, and drive him around town and just do all the things with him. Became good friends. You know, I learned young just to stay out of the way of people that are stars and just kind of be a fly on the wall. And I think that's why Toby liked me. I was never in anybody's business, but I would wait for them to ask me stuff. And Toby ended up really liking me. You know, he treated me like a son. And, you know, right before he died, me and Micah, his background singer, sent him a picture from backstage to Opry. And he texts back. He's like, that's my oldest son.
Oh, my God.
And then, you know, like, man, that meant a lot, because I really looked up to Toby and learned a lot from him as far as music business. Of just,
what do you learn? Like, what kind of things would he teach you?
Toby just didn't take shit from anybody. Like, he did whatever he wanted. Whatever people thought he should do, he would do what he wanted. And I always took what he said long ago, and it just came out recently that he said when he was starting, he said, I might not out-sing him, I might not out-ride him, but they're not going to outwork me.
Yeah.
And I've always just kept that, like, same with me.
But that idea of, like, don't take shit from anyone, like, that's such a great mentality to have. But I feel like when you're in the heat of the moment and you're dealing with gatekeepers and whatnot, like, it's kind of hard to follow through on that. So, like, when you made your debut at the Opry, they wanted to use the Opry House Band,
yeah,
which is, like, the best musicians in the world.
I know.
And you said, no, I'm going to have my band play.
We respectively asked.
Yeah,
you know,
to me, this is crazy, though. I
know.
I would be using the Opry House Band.
I know.
Forget the band. This is the Chancey Williams show. Like
I know.
This is insane to me.
And it was, you know, that's one of those moments where you're like, well, I really want to play the Opry.
Yeah.
That's, every artist's dream is to stand there and sing in that circle. But, you know, I knew that I would have never got asked to play the Opry if it wasn't for the work my band also put in. We did it together. So we respectively asked, you know, we'd love to make our debut. Is there any way I can do it with my band? And they said, sure.
Oh, so really? It was that easy?
Well, I don't know. That's the answer I got. I don't know what happened.
I heard they had to go back and forth a couple times. They said, well, can you do it with two players?
Yeah.
And then we said, no, we got to do the whole band.
Yeah, it started that way. They said, you know, you can bring two side guys. It's like, well, I have a six-piece band.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to tell the other guys?
Fuck, you know, off. That's what you tell the other guys. Well, you say, guys, I'm the star. Two of you. You fight it out. I don't care.
It's those type things. Like, I feel like Toby Keith would have done that. Like, no, I'm bringing my band,
yeah,
or I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready to go to the mat that bad. If they would have pushed back and said, it's absolutely not, I still probably would have done it.
I'll play your band members this clip, and I'll show them that,
yeah,
that you were ready to throw them under the bus. But, no, I'm kidding.
No, I told, and the band was all good with it. They said, hey, man, if you do have to go do it yourself, we get it.
Yeah, right.
Just go do it. But I was like, man, because you only get one debut.
Yeah.
So I played the Opry three times. So the last two times I did use the house band just because it was easier for me to fly in
and just do
play
it
and then, yeah, fly back. But you only get one debut, and it's the most memorable night. Your family comes. They present you with the parking thing. I mean, it was just a moment that I wanted the whole band to experience together, and we got to do it. So, I mean, we'll remember that forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that's unbelievable. So, okay, so now you're interning in Nashville.
Yeah.
And then basically, is your thing like, I don't know what I'm going to do, so I'm just going to meet some people in Nashville. And then you were basically touring. I was like, what, you're doing covers essentially? Like,
well,
early
we still
on?
Were,
or,
but
or
when I was here, I did an album. So I met a guy named Dave Brainerd, and I was like, I'd like to do an album of original songs, you know, and I wasn't writing a lot then. So I was getting outside songs from people I'd meet in town, the writer's night. Like, hey, man, anybody cut that? Like, no, go ahead. So I did this album called Honky Tonk Road, which was my first record, and I love that record still, and made this album. Didn't know what I was going to do. Should I stay in Nashville? So I didn't know Wyatt that well. And so Wyatt's younger brother played with me, but he died in a car wreck on the way to one of our shows. His name was Gabe. Gabe was awesome. And so I'd only met Wyatt at the funeral. So I, you know, that all that passed, and I moved down here, and I was like, Wyatt plays guitar. So I just cold called Wyatt. I said, hey, man, it's Chancey. I just did a record in Nashville, thinking about moving back and just touring. I need a guitar player. He's like, I'm in. He was teaching school, and he's like, I'll quit tomorrow.
No way.
Yeah.
And did you know you were going to be able to even pay him? Or like,
I didn't.
Like, where did you think like you were going to be able to afford to live? Like, were you working other jobs early on? Or you just thought, we have to make this work?
We had played so much in college that all these connections of these rodeos and street dances and stuff that we had played a lot. Then I kind of knew what they had paid. And I said, you know, here's what I can pay you. So put the band together. I was playing bass guitar still because I didn't have a lot of players. I was playing bass. Wyatt was lead guitar. My high school drummer was still with us. He joined back. And then so we're a four-piece band. And then met Brooke at a bar in Wyoming. And she's like, I play violin. I was like, oh, that's great. I'm kind of looking for some players. So we went and watched her audition. So Brooke joined like a month after Wyatt. So now we kind of had a band. And I was booking shows at these rodeos. And at that point, we couldn't just out of the gate just start playing all the songs off my first record. People knew us for playing Should Have Been a Cowboy and That Ain't My Truck and these covers. And we were a party band. I mean, that's what they were hiring us for.
Yeah.
So that transition from being this, you know, I would call it, we were a pretty good cover band out west for rodeos and parties, to switching that, turning that corner into being an artist. So people would call, you know, we did that for a few years, kind of learned how to play, learned how to open for people. We played the Grizzly Rose a lot. We played these beer tents, started doing our own stuff. But then people, we finally sat down one day and said, are we going to do this forever? Or are we going to be the four set a night band? Or are we going to be an artist? Said, all right, from now on when they call, tell them we play 90 minutes of only our own stuff.
Yeah.
That was a really hard
pill
to swallow.
You had two covers.
Yeah. And we still do a few covers in the show to this day, but changing everybody's mentality out west of who already knew us. Well, we're not that anymore. Well, we want you for 4 hours. Well, we don't do that anymore. Well, why would I pay you more money? You're asking for more money too to play less time. Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
The power of no, really, you know, the CEO of Cheyenne Frontier Days told me that. I said, just start turning things down. And it really helps. And so we turned that corner, but it was a tough pill to swallow. You're nervous. I'm trying to figure out how to pay my guys. Is anybody going to hire us? They want us for what they used to know us
for. So who hires you then at that point? Because nobody wants, like, if people don't know your songs, it's hard to get hired.
Well, we slow played everybody into it. So we started saying, all right, we'll do 2 1-hour sets with 30-minute break, and then we'll bring an opener. They'll play an hour. So we were trying to fulfill their, like, close to
their
4 hours.
For time, yeah.
So we got to where there for a while, we're just doing 2 1-hour sets, mostly our own stuff with some covers in there, and just kind of fooled everybody. And then it got to where people knew our stuff.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, now we're just doing 90s. Oh, okay. Then it's just everybody just kind of caught
on.
And
then it works.
Yeah.
Are you dating Brooke? You're dating Brooke,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, we've dated for
a long
time.
How do you go from how do you go from a professional setting to dating her? It's kind of a risky thing, isn't it?
Well,
you're on the road. It's like...
It's worked for so long. I mean, so when she joined the band, she had a boyfriend, I had a girlfriend, and we were just friends for, you know, a long time. So she was in the band, shoot, 8 or 9 years before we ever dated. We were just friends, you know, and worked out. And then at the same time, she was single, I was single, and we were hanging out all the time. I was like, you know, why wouldn't this work? And it has. We've dated.
But did you literally have a conversation like that? You were like,
well, we knew it was
maybe
risky.
We should date.
So we hit it for a long time just because
everybody. But what happened? One day you're just hanging out after a show and like you start making out. Like is that what happens?
Pretty much. I mean, you can just sense it. You know, you start hanging out with somebody who's more than just friends. You're like, oh,
yeah.
You know, maybe we are more than friends. But you know, we hit it from the band and from the public for a really long time just because all those movies growing up of bands, it doesn't look good. The guy dates the girl in the band and breaks the band up.
It's a great look. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
If you can keep the band together, everybody wants that.
And so it works good. And we're together so much on the road, you know, why not? And so it's been great. And she still lives in Casper and I live in Laramie. So we don't live together, which people think, why aren't you married? Why aren't you this and that? Like, well, our deal works for us. So we just, you know, we're together 275 days a year, which is probably more than some couples that have a husband or wife that travels for work.
Yeah.
So we're together a lot, but it's got the point where she likes her time at home to do her own thing. I come to Nashville. She comes sometimes, sometimes doesn't. So she likes, it just works. Yeah. But yeah, she's great, man. Great personality and a trooper. You know, most girls wouldn't last in a band that long, but she's been with boys for this long, and you know, we've made her tough.
Yeah, you've got such a great catalog of just like cowboy songs and like Western songs. I think I love the song of yours, "The Saint," which is such a it's a story song. Were you thinking I need a song like this in my catalog? And then did you sort of come up, like, did you write down this story that you wanted to tell in song? Like, how'd you come up with that song?
So it was actually my mom. You know, I'd been putting albums out, and we were writing a lot, and, you know, trying to write a little bit. I never really write toward radio, but I want my stuff to compete. So, you know, I'm not trying to write the next number one on radio, but I would like my stuff to compete. So I was writing that stuff. Mom's like, I was getting ready to go to Nashville. She's like, you need a good story song. I'm like, all right. So I was on the airplane, and I was going through my movies on my iPad, and I had this old movie on there called Nevada Smith. It's an old Steve McQueen Western. And it's this great movie about him as a boy, sees his family get murdered. His mom's an Indian, and his dad's a white guy, and they literally skin his mom. And so throughout the movie, he finds these three guys that robbed and killed his parents and kills them back. And I got here, and I was writing with Tran. I was like, hey, we should write something like an old West thing, that revenge type thing. So we kind of wrote along the lines of that movie called Nevada Smith, and we put Denver in it and kind of made it for our area. But it's one of my favorite songs I've ever wrote, just because
really
it's just, you don't hear songs like that anymore that are maybe have that Chris Ledoux take on them a little bit, just an old West thing. And I mean, I guess nowadays you're kind of starting to hear that sound a little bit, but that's just, people love that song, and it's hard hitting, it's revenge, and he kills them, and he hunts them all down. And
it's fun to listen to a story song like that, because you really kind of are listening to every single word.
Yeah, and you can picture when you're hearing it down, you can watch it in your own mind, in your own brain movie of him getting revenge for his parents.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. That's why it's fun.
Yeah,
yeah. Then okay, your last single too, "A Cowboy Who Would," which is a great song. This just sounds like a classic song.
And I didn't write that one. Bryce Long is producing this new record for me, a friend of mine. He's a cowboy in town too, and you know, he writes for Sony, and so we wrote some on this new record together, and we got some outside songs, and that was an outside one. I was like, man, we got
to
cut that.
Were you nervous to take some outside cuts?
Not really. So like I said, Honky Tonk Road, my first album, was all outside.
Yeah.
The second album, Highway Junkie, was all outside. The third was all outside. But if you're not a big artist in town, it's hard to get your hands on
great songs.
On great songs. Yeah. And I get it. As a songwriter, if you know you write a hit that day, they're probably not calling Chancey. They're probably calling, you know, Luke Bryan or Kenny Chesney, you know. So just to get those songs is tough. So I just found out I'm just going to start writing what I like. I'm not getting pitched the stuff. I could tell the stuff I was getting pitched had been circulated around town for years. I'm like, why has everybody else passed on this?
Yeah.
And I never really look at that. If I love a song, I'll still cut it. But I just wasn't getting good stuff. So we started writing. This last album, One of These Days, I co-wrote 11 of the 12 songs on there. And it was good. But this new batch, Bryce was like, hey, I got some cool outside songs. I got a Tom Douglas song we haven't put out yet that's a monster. That Cowboy Who Would just fit me. And that's the thing, we didn't really want to chase radio. We just needed something that pushed what I've done but still stays true to our brand. Because we have this foundation of fans that have been with us from the start that are cowboys that love us for things like The Saint. We can't go off the wall and cut Cruise. You know what I mean? I mean, I would if I could, but
yeah.
so big. But, you know, we have to stay true to our brand. So finding those songs in town that we think would compete at radio that are true to our brand, it's hard to find those, but we have a few that are in the can we haven't put out yet.
That song, though, came out, got 150 radio ads.
I know.
How do you do that as an independent artist?
Charla McCoy.
So you call her and you say, Charla,
well, we
let's
just
get to work.
We've done a lot of those things and made a lot of connections over the years. Like I said, we've done everything the hard way and the backwards way. So getting to know a lot of those radio personnel over the years, and you know, Fitz, the CT Top 40, we met Fitz through Charla's radio remotes, and Fitz likes us. So he put that song on his launch pad, which was huge for an independent artist to get national radio play on the Top 40 countdown. Like, I'd have never dreamed that. It's Bob Kingsley's old show.
Yeah.
So it was a dream come true. So these little things, to me, it's the baby steps of a career that have gotten us where we are, you know. I mean, I think as a young artist, everybody wants to be a big star tomorrow, but the longer I've been in it, and even early, I didn't really want that overnight success because it can go away that fast too. I've wanted to build this foundation and build a career where I can sing when I'm 70, where people, there's still a demand, people want to hire us for shows versus you have a big number one, then they forget about you, and then you're working at Subway or something.
What do you think is the next big milestone in your career that you're trying to hit? Is it a label deal, or is it just, is it the slow build and there's no kind of big thing? It's just, we're just going to keep building it slowly. Like, what is the thing right now that you think is going to take it to the next level?
You know, I think at the end of the day, it's all about the song. I mean, if a song goes viral and nobody knows how that works, we've had all these meetings in town over the years where everybody gives you advice of what to do. At the end of the day, the worst?
Nobody
really knows.
I hate that. I've stopped listening to, I used to crave people's advice, and now I'm like, just shut up. Like, you don't know what you're talking about.
If there was a roadmap and somebody knew, everybody would be replicating it.
Yeah.
So even like big labels say, oh, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. Well, like, well, why aren't you doing it for that artist you just signed? Why don't they have a number one right now? Because nobody really knows what works.
I mean,
at the end of the day, they can force things to number one, but that is what it is. But, you know, something going viral on the internet. And I don't know. I'm more of the slow climb. We've built this foundation. And I think our next step is, you know, we had a plan doing these albums. My manager's from South Dakota.
What does your manager do? Does he manage you full time?
He owns a company in South Dakota called the Home Slice Group. They're an advertising company and done concert promotion for years. And we've been together with Dean for 10 years. And we signed on with Dean as a manager way back when because he knew our area. You know, we were playing the 5-state area, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming. They kind of got what we did because sometimes in Nashville, they don't really get what we do out west. Even to this day, people are like, oh, you got a little band out there? I'm like, dude, we're making more money than your artists that have label deals.
Probably,
I'm just telling you, like, we stay busy. So we signed on with Dean, and at that time, we were having management meetings in town. I just never felt like they really understood what I was. Because back then, that was kind of the bro country era, and I was not that. And that's okay. They're like, what are we going to do with the cowboy? I'm like, well, I'm working.
Yeah.
So we knew that our next goal was to get a national booking agency. So, you know, we met with a couple and ended up at WME, which has been great. So we knew that was our next step. And now we think our next step is, could it be a label deal? Sure. We've been having meetings. Those are tricky because we've put together so much on our own as an independent artist. That's
the problem.
We're not really willing to hand over the keys to it all the way. I'm willing to hand over part of it. Sure. I mean, who doesn't want to make more money? But I'm not just going to give you everything I've accomplished either.
Yeah. But when with the success of an artist like Cody Johnson,
right?
Have you sensed that all tides have been rising, like that people then can look at you and can sort of see what you're doing? Because now there's like a blueprint for someone can have like insane success with this path, right?
Right.
Is there a different energy the past couple of years with Cody Johnson out there?
With Cody and like stuff like Yellowstone. And, you know, we used to open for Cody before he had a deal, but Cody's deal was so unique. His streaming was so big.
Yeah.
Nashville had to do something with him. I mean, and he cut a great deal. So, but yeah, that is a good blueprint. So as soon as Cody signed a deal, we're rooting it on. Like, we need Cody Johnson to work.
Yeah, because it's going to.
If they would have tried Cody and it didn't work, they would have never looked at us again. Like, well, we tried that with Cody Johnson. He was huge.
Right.
Streaming.
How much pressure? Yeah.
So we're like, we're rooting Cody on. We're like, come
please.
On, more number ones. And,
yes.
And Cody's selling out stadiums, I mean, and arenas, and I mean, he sold out Houston, and he's selling out all. I mean, great blueprint for a guy like me, another cowboy, doing it. So, sure, would we like a label deal? Yeah, I'm just looking for the one that wants to do it with us. Like, let's not screw each other. Like, I'll work as hard as possible. You won't find anybody that works harder. And everybody says that in the music business. They're not us. They weren't ranch kids. Like, to me, this is not work. But we'll go wherever. I've never turned down an interview or a podcast. Everything they asked me to do, I've done it for years.
Oh, that's good to know. I thought we were having, like, exclusive. I thought it was hard to get you, but apparently he just goes on anyone's show.
Well, I don't get asked to be on a lot.
Oh, boy.
So, thanks for having me on.
But I'm just kidding.
It's been great, man. So doing it our own way. And like I said, if we find a label that wants to team up and they truly believe in you, let's go. But if I also don't want to get signed and sit there for 5 years. I ain't got time for that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out and put out my own music.
No. You can't wait around for 5 years.
No.
This new single, I think this could be out by the time this drops. One Bad Mother Buckaroo.
Yeah.
This is a fun song. This is just a party song.
Yeah.
This is just about having fun.
Yeah, it's about that guy. So out west, everybody knows this guy. He's One Bad Mother Buckaroo. It's a guy you maybe see once or twice a year, doesn't really come to town. You can visualize him. He's driving down the road in his flatbed pickup with his dog sitting shotgun with him, and he's just a great hand. He's a cowboy. Maybe likes to drink a little bit too much and tear up the night. And I wrote it with Bryce, and it's just a feel good song. We've been playing it live, and the crowd loves it, and they can already sing along to it after hearing it once because it's kind of repetitive.
Yeah, right,
the
right.
One Bad Mother Buckaroo thing's fun to say, and so we're excited about it. And we just had this idea today, right before we came here. Like, we need to shoot a video for this. And, you know, videos are so expensive, and they are what they are. You don't make any money back on it. I told Dean, I was like, what if we let the fans shoot it? So we put on our socials. Everybody who wants to, go shoot some video of what you think this song means. It's a cowboy or your grandpa or your uncle. Maybe even lip sync into it. Send us the footage. We'll piece it together. You fans make the video. We're like, I don't know if this will work or not, but why not? Let's try it. Shoot it on a cell phone. I don't care.
And are we still living it, or have submissions already come in?
We just thought of it an hour ago.
Oh, it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's like, because by the time we fly down here and shoot a video.
No. Or fly, what are you going to do with that?
Fly a crew out to Wyoming. It gets expensive. And we're like, oh, man. What? I was like, what if we just, because nowadays, people don't care if it's on a cell phone or a fancy camera. People just, and how many people watch the full video anyway? We need these clips. So, once the song gets released May 31st, we say.
That's right around the corner. I think by the time this comes out, you can go listen to it.
We say, you guys go film. If you want your footage to be in this video yourself, film yourself lip syncing this.
Right.
Send it. Send us some cowboy clips. Whatever you think fits, we'll piece it together. You guys make the video.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I love it. Come back on. We'll do an update.
Yeah.
Chancey Williams in the studio. You're about to play Red Rocks, too.
Yep, June 5th.
Right? With who?
With Ian.
Ian Munsick.
And Warren Treaty.
Warren Treaty.
Yeah.
That's
unbelievable.
That's insane.
So, you know, we live just north of Colorado and across in Wyoming, and it's been one of those venues I wanted to play my whole life. And I've purposely never been to a concert there because I wanted my first concert to be, I could see it from the stage.
Yeah.
Which I'd be like, man, I really need to play Red Rocks because I've missed out on a whole bunch of concerts I've wanted to see there.
Yeah.
Just standing by my
Now
guns.
You'll be able to go anytime you want to go.
So,
yeah.
It sold out within a few days. I think half of Wyoming's coming.
No way.
Just because of, you know, us and Ian, both Wyoming boys. And everybody that we know that's ever supported us over the years wants to see us at Red Rocks. So it's going to be unbelievable.
Dude, that's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's going to be incredible.
I can't hardly believe it. And, you know, we've got to do a lot of cool things as an independent artist, right? So played the Opry 3 times. We got to play the Ryman with Cody. You know, Cody asked us to open for him there. We've played Billy Bob's. We've played China Frontier Days. We're playing Calgary Stampede Rodeo this summer. We've got to do so many things without being signed or having virtually any help from Nashville. We just kind of carved our own way out. Red Rocks is another one we're, you know, checking off the list. So we just keep having these monumental things that happen in our career that, like, man, well, we're doing something right.
Yeah.
We're selling tickets. People like what they hear. They're downloading the stuff. So just keep doing it. And if Nashville wants to get on board, cool. If they don't, that's okay too.
Yeah.
We're just going to keep doing it. They can't ignore us. That's the one thing, you know, I feel like town can control artists a little bit with songs and labels and stuff. They can't control people calling you to book you. So people want, we are in demand for concerts. They can't really control that. So we just keep doing that. And then if they want to get on board, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I had no idea that you have such a relationship with Chris Ledoux and his family.
Yeah.
But do you ever think, like, do you ever wish he was around and you could pick his brain for advice? And
He was so good to me. Like, and it was because Dad and him grew up together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd see him at the high school rodeos. I'm like, how's it going, Chris? You know, everybody loved Chris. He's the king of Wyoming and always will be.
Yeah.
And I get compared to him a lot. And I always tell people, like, of course I've looked up to Chris. He was my idol growing up. He was a cowboy that rodeoed that was successful in music. That's what I want to do. But I never wanted to be Chris. I want to carve my own path. But there's a lot of similarities just because we both rodeoed and we're both from Wyoming. But, you know, when we first started, we were terrible. And I'd called their house phone and Peggy answered, his wife, and Ned was living down here, their boy, and we were coming down for spring break, our first trip to Nashville. I said, can I get Ned's number? I'm going to call him when we're in Nashville. And I had Peggy on the phone. I was like, screw it, I'll go for it. I was like, hey, Peg, how's a guy get into doing like opening act stuff for Chris or Art? She's like, well, I don't know. Here, I'll put Chris on. He's in the bathtub. So like, you know, Chris and his Chris LeDoux voice is, you know, hey, Chancey, how you doing? I was like, you know, I was just kind of curious. I was young. I was 20. How's a guy get into doing opening stuff? He's like, well, would you like to open in Billings at the Metro in August? I'm like, yeah, of course we would. He's like, okay, well, we'll have you up there.
And what'd you do? Solo acoustic?
Full band. We were terrible.
And you were horrible.
Oh, thinking back, and I remember asking Chris, you want me to send you like a demo CD or something? He's like, no, just be there. And that was our first big show in front of 8,000 people. And then that's kind of what gave me the bug. I'm like, man.
How good were you really, though? Like, do you think it was really a disaster, or was it okay?
There's probably some recordings floating around I'd like to dig up.
Yeah, I think
it was pretty bad. I mean, we weren't bad because we were still getting booked a lot of things, but, you know, we were nervous.
Yeah.
We weren't playing to a click track. We sped. I remember here in the back, we played everything 100 miles an hour, you know, and my knees were shaking. But I remember in soundcheck, Chris walking out in the Metro listening to a sound check, and you know, we got off stage and he said, looks like you're meant to be on stage. I was like, really? Okay.
He was like, no, I'm just joking with you, but I'm trying to give you false confidence because you're about to go.
But Chris going on, you know, just on a whim letting us open gave me the bug. And I thought, if Chris
that's incredible.
Yeah. And which, you know, the Chris LeDoux tie led me to the Toby Keith tie, which led me to TK and everybody. So it's like it's all this business, as you know, is all about connections, just meeting people. And if it wasn't for Chris, I probably would have never done an internship in Nashville, you know. But yeah, if he, I'll think if he was still alive, how big he would be. I mean, he's the godfather of cowboy music and he's the king of Wyoming. And he was just at his peak, you know, when he got cancer and died, you know. I mean, who knows how big Chris would be if he was still alive. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And the music he would have continued to make would be probably be so great. But, you know, it's like he left a memory on everybody and gave me the power to, you know, and the want to do what Chris did. And so, like, you know, you probably get it getting compared to other podcasts. Maybe like Bobby. Do you want to be Bobby Bones? Maybe not. But do you look up to him? Yeah. That's how I'm with Chris. One of my heroes. But I don't want to be Chris. There's only ever one Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't replicate
but
that.
But I feel like I try to take a little bit of pieces from everyone. I feel like I'm a little bit of this person or a little bit of this podcast or a little bit of this interviewer and then a little bit myself. And it's like, you know, you try to pull pieces from everywhere and pull it.
Can I ask you a question?
You ask me anything.
Hey, so you're from New York, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what got you into country music?
It was the guitar playing.
It was?
Well, I'm a...
So did you grow up listening to country music?
In high school, I got really into it, but I grew up listening to like classic rock,
okay.
A lot of early 2000s, like New York rock bands, so like the Strokes,
yeah,
Vampire Weekend. Like I was a guitar guy, and the thing that got me into country music was the guitar playing, because it was the only mainstream music, even though it wasn't mainstream in New York, it was the only mainstream music that had like great guitars.
Right.
And I could go to a country show and basically see a rock band
right
in an arena or an amphitheater where I couldn't really see that with pop music. So that's kind of what got me in originally. And then I just started to get into it more and more and listening to it. And the thing with country is the guitar heroes in country are the session players.
Right.
There aren't that many. There's only a handful of like real guitar icons.
Right.
It's like probably five.
Right.
It's like Keith Urban, Brad Paisley.
Exactly.
Who else? There's like no one else. Like a little bit like Joe Don Rooney, Rascal Flatts. Like that's a personality guitar
right.
player.
Yeah, now that you bring that up,
there's not a ton.
Right. That are just.
There are like household names that are stunning.
I know I'm missing some, but there's some, but not a lot, like you said.
Right.
So you were in New York, started like guitar playing country music, and you're like, I'm moving to Nashville?
Well, I'd interned in Nashville when I was in college, and I interned in L.A. and New York, too. And
okay.
I just had a great time in Nashville. And to me, it's like guitar town. Like, mm-hmm. to me, the thing that keeps me in Nashville is the guitar playing. I still think, even though there's amazing, I have friends in New York who are unbelievable, and I have friends in L.A. who are incredible, I think pound for pound, the best and the most vibrant culture for guitar players is in Nashville. I fully believe that.
That's cool.
And to me, that's kind of what keeps me here.
So did you come, you wanted to be a guitar player, or you just liked the music? Like, because I know you play. Did you come down here and play?
No, I came down here to work in management originally.
Did
but,
you?
But I always wanted to be a guitar player.
How'd you
player.
Know that you were great at doing interviews?
I
you just figured out, like, I'm going to start a podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. But I host a radio show in college.
Okay.
Like a little, like a tiny little local.
I got to say, man, I do a lot of interviews. But like when I met you with Zach, the other Zach, I was like, just visiting with you, I'm like, I can tell this guy's on the up and up. And just, you're great at talking to people. So I didn't want to bug you back then because I barely knew you. And then when I met you through Ian again, I told Dean, I was like, we should try to get on Zach's podcast. I like his interviews. I've been listening to your podcast. So I was just curious because listening to some of your stuff that you moved from New York and, you know, and you don't think somebody from New York's a big country music fan.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So you're like,
now it's coming around though. But you know what was funny is like I'd watch these YouTube videos and I'd see George Strait playing in arenas or Garth Brooks playing in arenas and stadiums, and none of my friends knew who they were. And then a lot of my friends' parents wouldn't know who they were. Like I'd be like, "Oh, I'm listening to, you know, Garth Brooks or whatever," and people would be like, "I don't know who that is." Oh,
that's crazy.
Which is crazy. And but I'd be like, "How is this possible? Because he seems like he's the biggest star in the world." It was like it was an interesting way to get into country music, and then I think it kind of becomes your thing. Like that becomes like this identity that you have, which is like that's my thing. I still listen to classic rock and hip hop and pop, and I still kind of listen to everything. But it was like I also just got really into country music too.
That's really cool, man. I was just kind of curious from listening to yours, and like you think New York doesn't have country fans, but they do. You know, we played the East Coast in the whole month of November in Boston. And
Boston's a huge, even I went to college in Boston. Boston's a huge country market.
Yeah, we played House of Blues there.
Oh, yeah.
With Ian.
I used to work at the House of Blues.
Did you?
Yeah.
Fenway.
By Fenway. Yeah, I was a stagehand at the House of Blues, and I would help the shows load in.
That's great.
And I'd push carts, and we did an Eric Paisley show. We did a Lindsay L show there, I remember. But we did a Joe Perry show, too. He came through with road cases that said Aerosmith on them, and I was pushing Aerosmith road cases and setting up his guitars and everything.
Yeah, and so, you know, we went from, you know, I'd never really been to the East Coast, but go out there, and there's fans out there singing our songs. I'm like, how's people on the East Coast know our stuff? But, you know, Dean, our manager, was saying, you know, well, there's so many millions of people out here that you only need 5,000 of those millions to come each night.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, it does help to have the numbers, and, you know, I think, you know, where we grew up has helped and hurt us.
Yeah.
There's not just a lot of people out there. Everybody knows us. There's just not that many people. So
New York is also more country than it is city. Like when people think of New York, they think of New York City, which is a tiny little island. But the state of New York is very rural.
Right. Isn't there ranches and farming?
It's
and all
super stuff? Country. Yeah. Like, or it's super just small town. Yeah. Like most of New York is like people forget that. It's like very small town.
I feel like California and New York both get a bad rap for that. Like everybody's always like, oh, all these Californians moving out west. It's like, well, those Californians that are leaving California don't like California, so they're kind of like us.
Yeah.
But we've played California a lot, and there's so many good pockets.
California gets country too, because I've toured through California, and I've been kind of like up, like more northern in California. It's like, where the hell are we? Like,
and there's ranches and farmers and cowboys and big rodeos, but it's like L.A. and San Francisco and San Diego give the state a bad name. It's like, don't not visit California. There's cowboys out there. It's very pretty.
Yeah.
And the people are so nice. And I feel like New York's probably the same way. People are like, oh, New Yorkers. Like, well, go visit the state.
Yeah.
And go visit New York City, too. But it's not all New York City.
Yeah. Like, although I like cranky New Yorkers. To me, that's very comforting.
I've never been to New York City.
Oh, really? Dude, you got to go.
I know.
To me, when I see cranky people, like it's so comforting to me.
You're like, oh, I'm home.
Like, yeah. But like, I'm not even kidding. Like, it's not even a joke. Like, I love being around like old, cranky, complaining people.
It's funny you say that. We played in France one year, and you know, we'd been over there for about a week, and flew back into New York, and you know, we'd had enough of being overseas. It was really fun, but we wanted to be home.
Yeah.
Landed in New York, and people, like you said, were real grumpy. Like, oh, feels good to be.
Feels good to be back, right? Yeah.
We're getting yelled at TSA by New Yorkers, like, man, it feels good to be home.
That's how I feel. I got into a screaming match yesterday with someone at Whole Foods. She was blocking the entrance at the garage.
Right.
And her car was just there, like stuck in the middle of the road. So I pulled up and I'm sitting there for like a couple minutes, and I sort of give her like a little honk, like what are we doing here? And she gets out of her car and she starts screaming at me, and she goes, "You don't honk at me." I go, "You're blocking the road." I get out of the car. I go, "What are you doing? Move your car. You're blocking the road." She goes, "Ask me to move my car. Don't honk at me. Ask me to move my car." I go, "What are you doing? Like, you're the one who's just blocking the road. We got this whole thing."
That's where there needs to be two different honk tones.
Yeah, a friendly honk, a gentle honk.
I'm not honking to be mean. It's like, hey, excuse me, go ahead.
Yeah, she started screaming at me. I've never felt more at home in my life. I love the whole
exchange. We need the mean honk where it was like, hey, which is maybe the finger. Yeah.
That's such a good idea. You need two honks.
We need the nice, like, hey, just letting you know, light's green.
Yeah. Beep, bop. Just move a little bit. Yeah. Oh, my God. We need that.
I know. Because, like, I feel like I'd never honked at anybody in my life till I moved down here, and my friends would be driving around with it. Everybody's honking at everybody. Like,
oh, I honk all the time. But when I when I drive my friends, they are embarrassed by how much I honk.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Because I'm the first to honk. And then, but the thing is, like, I don't mind, because sometimes I'll be at a light and I'll be looking at my phone, or I'll get distracted, light will turn green, and somebody will honk me. And that doesn't bother me.
Right, you're like, oh, sorry.
I'm like, yeah. But some people are like so turned
off
by it.
I like to give them the moment.
It.
I see it green, I'm like, okay.
Give them a moment.
Hey,
yeah.
I got you.
And then it's like, I got your back. We need more community. It's a community thing.
Right.
We're all looking out for each other
for sure.
With the honks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chancey Williams, he's on tour all the time.
Yep.
He's got a new song coming out, probably already out by the time you listen to this. I got to get the title right. One Bad Mother Buckaroo.
Yeah.
This is a party song.
Yeah. It's and, cowboy and go, party. It's fun.
It's fun. And go listen to The Saint, too, if you haven't heard it.
Yeah,
It's a great story song. It's fun. You're going to listen to it a couple times in a row, first time.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. And go find my show. He's playing Red Rocks. You can still get tickets. Can you? Maybe it's sold out.
It's sold out. Actually, we're doing a giveaway on our website for a pair of tickets. We had two left.
No way. How much longer is that going to... This is going to come out next week.
The drawing's May 31st.
May 31st. You might be able to sneak in. If you're listening to this before May 31st, you might sneak in and be able to enter.
So we're doing the drawing the same day the new single's coming out. So if they click on the link, you know, I think it takes them to our Spotify and you have to like it, and then you're entered to win.
Yeah.
It's a marketing
Or go to StubHub and pay way too much money
for
the tickets secondhand, and you'll still have a good time. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Chancey, dude, thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I've been wanting to come on
Absolutely.
For a while. You're great at what you do, so I appreciate
taking
the time for me. I know everybody in town probably wants to get on with you, so
dude,
thanks for taking a chance on this old Wyoming cowboy.
Dude, anytime. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
We'll do it again. We did it.
Whew.